Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno, and at the top of the show, I just want to thank all of the essential workers out there, from the doctors to nurses to janitors to the guy who brings me my acai bowl every day. You're all fucking heroes.
Well, did you see we spent all that money on the Blue Angels?
I know. That was a lot of money to kind of look at something and go,
Also, did you see the big, quilt or whatever that thing is that Cuomo made?
I don't think Cuomo made it.
I think that someone somewhere in the Midwest was like, I've got two masks left. I'm going to have one for me, and I'm going to send one to New York City for a hospital worker. And then to know that it just ended up on this fucking art project.
Yeah, I know. That was what I was thinking when I saw it, too. This is the voice of Vin Forte. Vin, welcome.
Hey.
Nice to have you back.
Yeah, definitely.
So, do you watch the Cuomo show every day?
Yeah, every day at noon. He does his little, he's got jokes. He's a regular Jimmy Fallon.
I love when he high-roads people.
Oh, yeah.
The other day, this woman asked a question, which was pretty, it wasn't that big a question. She said, you know, a lot of people who have small businesses, their workers have, you know, gone away. Do you know what the state can do to help those businesses when they open back up if they don't have workers? And then Cuomo goes, forced labor in America? I don't think so. As if the woman's saying, like, do you condone slavery?
Yeah. I love, if you follow him on Twitter, every day he will post a picture of himself with that, like, graphic board beside him. And the slide on it just says, today is Friday, or like, today is Saturday.
He's a regular fucking Jon Stewart with that graphic.
Yeah, he's got jokes on it all the time.
It's amazing. He really, it's like FDR's Fireside Chats.
It's like if Jay Leno did the Fireside Chats.
Well, come on, Cuomo was much funnier than Jay Leno ever was.
That's true. I shouldn't. That was uncalled for.
Let's not.
So, let's not say things we can't take back.
Have you been enjoying your quarantine?
Well, yes, it's delicious. It's rich and chocolatey. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said my Ovaltine.
Oh, you.
Oh. I wish I could find Ovaltine. I can't. I haven't found Ovaltine in like years. I'm sure it's just on a shelf somewhere, and I just can't see it for some reason.
Maybe all the Ovaltine got bought up at the beginning of this pandemic.
Maybe. All the toilet paper, Ovaltine, and fruit. For whatever reason, I can't find, like, vegetables anywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's very odd. Like, I feel like I'll walk into the store, and on any given day, a new, like, random department of food will be missing.
Interesting. You know, everyone bought up toilet paper, but it ended up being paper towels that was the real gold.
Yeah.
Paper towels is like, it's like cigarettes in prison right now.
Oh, I don't know what I'd have to do to get paper towels right now.
You don't know what, you don't even want to know what you got to do. All right, Vin, let's talk about some news.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so a couple of shows ago, we talked about that AMC, the largest theater chain in America, might go completely bust.
Yeah, taken down by Trolls 2.
Well, wait. Before that, all right, that's the new wrinkle. They were doing poorly, you know, for the last couple of years, and then this pandemic didn't help things. But then Universal put out Trolls 2, Trolls World Tour, not to be confused with the classic horror film Troll 2.
No, very different movies.
We don't piss on hospitality.
No, I won't allow it.
No. Troll 2, which I've never seen Troll, but I think it's a huge franchise, and they put it on demand because Universal was like, you know what, we were supposed to release a film, the theaters are not running, let's put it on demand. Well, this really pissed off AMC, and AMC picked a fight that I don't know they could win, especially given where they're at right now.
Yeah, they're not really in a position to just be like, oh, we're not going to take, what, one-fifth of the movie industry in our theaters?
Yeah, right. They basically said publicly to Universal, because of these shenanigans, that's my word, not theirs, we are no longer going to license Universal films.
So you're not going to take the new Fast and the Furious movie. Okay, great. Enjoy not making millions of dollars.
It feels like a big old bluff at a time where, you know, it's like we're playing poker and AMC's like, you know what? Show them. But really their fucking hand is like a bunch of fucking jacks. All right, I'm going to be honest with you.
Like, they're playing with Yu-Gi-Oh cards. They're not even playing with, like, regular playing cards.
I don't know much about poker, so that metaphor really got away from me. Yeah, it's Yu-Gi-Oh cards and, like, a wild card from Uno. And who else chimed in? A few days after that, the second largest theater chain, Regal, their parent company, Cineworld, chimed in. They didn't make the same threat. They didn't say we're not going to show Universal movies, but they did say that they support AMC and that what Universal did is in bad faith. And we all know the business model. And basically they sort of piled on.
Yeah. Well, the business model's changing because guess what? Most kids aren't going to care to go to the theater to see Trolls 2. Right. And apparently, like, they released it, and they haven't released the full figures yet, but insiders are saying that this movie apparently made, like, hand over fist way more money streaming at home than they had ever projected it to make in the theaters.
And this was my prediction on this show. I said, when all of this started, if these movies make more money on demand than they were projected to make in theaters, this will just give the industry the okay to be like, you know what, fuck it.
Yeah, and it's finally gonna happen. They've been teasing for a long, long time. Like, a lot of studios have, like, little subdivisions, or, like, there'll be certain genres that they'll pump out, like horror movies, for example.
Yeah.
Big studios will pump a lot of horror movies out sort of straight to DVD.
Yeah.
And they'll, like, or they'll release them internationally in theaters or in certain markets where they know they'll do better in theaters, but they'll release them in America just straight to DVD. And now we're finally seeing that, like, everyone's coming around. Like, the theater house is going to be for cinematic experiences.
Right.
You're going to want to see, like, Trolls 2, perfect example. I could see that at home and be fine if I was going to see Trolls 2.
Right. I don't think young children have any connection to the movie-going experience the way us adults do.
No, but like Avengers Endgame, that I probably want to see in a theater.
It's funny, the Russo brothers floated the idea this week, the week we're recording, why not put it back out when theaters open up again?
Yeah, why not? I hope this leads to theaters being more personal and more curated.
I don't know. It could lead to that, but it could also lead to, you know, it could go further in the direction it has been going, where basically, like, three movies come out a year. And it's like a Star Wars movie, Fast and Furious movie, and then a Marvel movie. And those are huge, and that's all that plays in theaters. And then every other smaller film goes to video on demand or Netflix or Hulu or Amazon.
I mean, that's kind of already happening.
Right, that is kind of already happening.
I mean, really what killed a lot of these big movie companies is television. Television has usurped movies and has proven that you can get movie quality on TV. HBO, back in like the 2000s, was like the first domino in that chain.
Well, you know, with every new medium, the theater experience has suffered. From the invention of television, which led movie theaters to rely on, you know, CinemaScope and 3D and big old things, to the VCR, to the DVD player, to video on demand, then finally to streaming, which seems like it might be the final straw on the camel's back. Universal, or Comcast Universal, they, on their end of this fight, are standing pretty strong. I believe it was the CEO of Comcast Universal said something along the lines of, well, look, maybe what we'll do is we'll put them on VOD and in the theaters out on the same day, which is exactly what the theaters don't want.
Right.
He also said like you said, this is where it's going. He said, I'm not saying that we won't still work with the theaters, but in the future, I could very much see that this is the new model.
Yeah, it's going to be the new model. Because, again, the second it happens, and it seems like right out of the gate it's happened to Trolls 2, where they put a movie out, and it was projected to make, like, $30 million. And all of a sudden, it's made, like, $130 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
There's no going back. You don't put that back in the bottle at that point.
No, you don't. And that leads me to my next news story, which is this week, the Academy Awards revealed that they are going to change some of their rules.
Haven't they been, like, announcing rule changes for the past, like, 5 years?
Yes. The Academy Awards is, like, the they're kind of like the Olympics now, where they're kind of big in just in terms of they have cultural cachet, but no one cares that much anymore.
Yeah.
So, but what they did this year is they're saying, because of what's going on, the rule that you have to play theatrically is no longer on the table. They didn't say forever. They said just for this year.
It's not going to just be for this year.
Well, here's the other snotty thing that they did, though. They said it has to be a film that was slated to be released theatrically, because they don't want a horde of streaming movies to now be eligible.
But, like, what? If the best movie in the world comes out on Netflix, then it comes out on Netflix. I don't care. Like, this is where they're just, like, old codger, like, highfalutin. This is why people hate the Academy Awards.
Well, the people in the Academy, who are mostly white, older men, they work in the old industry.
Yeah, there have been reports that, like, when a really hip, like black movie comes out, like, there'll be people in the Academy that just don't even bother seeing it.
No. Well, that's a whole other thing, which is, I mean, we could go on forever. I've talked about it before. I'm not a fan of the Academy Awards. We have no system in which to prove that people have even watched the things they're voting for.
Yeah, and, like, what is, I think, because of the sort of allure of the Academy Awards, it's one of these things that, like, because it's been going on for over 50 years, there are some things in life that we really take for granted as meaning something.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people feel that way with the Academy Awards, where they're like, oh, this is the best picture of the year, I guess, because it won the Academy Award.
Right.
Meanwhile, it's like, who's in the Academy? Who voted on this?
Right, exactly. So the Academy Awards making this rule change probably didn't make AMC feel better.
No, bad week for AMC.
Yeah. Two other minor changes. Well, actually, they're not minor. One other change is there's no longer going to be an award for both sound mixing and sound editing. They're both going to be one award, which, I'll be honest with you, I have a master's degree in cinema and media studies. I taught cinema classes and communication classes for years. I can't tell you what these two Academy Awards, what the difference is between them.
There is a difference.
I'm sure there is.
But it's so, like,
well, now it's going to be one award.
I was going to say, like, it should just be one award for the whole, like, audio team.
Yeah, it's going to now be achievement in sound.
Yeah, because there is a difference, and the difference can be very, very important if you do a bad job at it. Because sound editing is basically, like, what you're thinking of in terms of, like, what it says it is. Like, sound, like, you're editing the sound of the movie. Sound mixing is making sure that the high sound high, the low sound low, the middle sound in the middle. Like, a good example of unique sound mixing would be in The Dark Knight Rises, how Bane's voice is high in the mix.
Right.
So it sounds like he's omnipotent. And some people erroneously at the time took that and thought, oh, they mixed it all wrong. His voice doesn't sound natural.
It sounds like it's almost, it's not in the diegesis. It's like, it's sort of coming outside of it. But that's genius.
Right. So that would be sound mixing.
Okay. I wonder, though, if this is a bad idea because, you know, if the Oscars has to change to become more relevant, maybe it should lean more into the technical things. You know, maybe there should be, you know, 10 different awards for visual effects.
I mean, there are enough movies use high-end visual effects now that
exactly. They should.
I mean, it's also a weird thing where they do have a whole separate award ceremony for technical Oscars.
That's true. That is true.
And it's like, but it's like the day before, and it's in like a smaller theater, I think, and nobody wide. It's not televised,
and it's hosted by Fran Drescher.
Oh man, I don't know if you're joking or not, but I would totally believe it.
It's somebody like that, typically.
You know, Fran Drescher has a new sitcom.
Does she?
On NBC.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What's it about?
I don't know. I just know that she has one, and I saw a preview for it.
Okay, we'll be following that story in the future.
Yes.
The last change that the Oscars announced is that, and this is minor, they are only going to be using digital codes to distribute the movies to the Academy, whereas in years past they were sending DVDs.
Good.
And this is just because they were getting criticism for the environmental impact of DVDs and stuff.
I feel like that's a cover up, because the real reason is way too many people were getting these screeners.
Oh, like, yeah.
Basically, if you're in SAG, which if you're like a working actor and you get like background work a couple of times, you can get in SAG.
Yeah.
You just get free movies. That's just once a year. You just get sent free movies all the time for like a couple months.
But what I don't know is, can you also share those digital codes? Because the same stuff will keep happening.
That's true. I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Yeah. Well, the other news story I wanted to talk about, and this is not related to the same thing, but it is related to the COVID-19 pandemic that is rocking the planet Earth, which is Disney furloughs 100,000 theme park and hotel workers amid coronavirus shutdown.
They don't need to do that.
That is a lot of people that don't get paid a lot to begin with being furloughed from the most successful media company in the history of humanity.
Yeah, they don't need to. This is just, it's corporate greed.
Now, I don't know how true this figure is, but it's being said that with Disney World and Disneyland and all the parks closed, Disney is losing $30 million a day. I don't know if that figure is right. I mean, it sounds very probable. It's a huge part of that company's business. But at the same time, if anybody could be a good corporate daddy and do something good for the rest of the corporate world to look at them and go, you know what, they're the leaders, we'll do like them, it could be Disney.
No, Disney's run by a big, smelly rat, and he isn't
And, you know, have you seen the movie Florida Project?
No.
It came out a few years ago, but it just recently came to Netflix, and now everybody's talking about it again. It's this really interesting slice of life movie about life in Florida outside of Disney World and the really shitty economy of Florida outside of Disney World.
Hmm.
If this continues the way it is, Florida's economy will suffer even more.
Well, yeah, like that's the weird conundrum that we're in, is that so many people are out of work, but a large majority of them are so-called furloughed workers. So in the case of Disney World, like, okay, they furloughed 100,000 people. If they immediately stick to their word and say, okay, we've got the all clear, let's bring all 100,000 back, then that would jumpstart the economy immediately. But if they decide, you know what, after evaluation, we don't need to bring back 100,000 people, we could just bring back like 60,000 people.
Yeah.
Then that's going to suck.
And I don't know if you remember this, but a couple years ago, there was a story. I don't remember if it was Dateline or I think maybe it started on NPR, actually. And it was about people who work in Disney parks but are basically homeless.
Oh, yeah. They live in like hotels like right outside Disney.
Yeah. It's a sad thing. And it's not right because you guys have all the fucking money.
Yeah.
So, once again, the news is not very happy.
Yeah, but enjoy Disney Plus.
Yes. all right, let's go over to the trailer corner, Vin.
All right.
So we looked at three trailers. I might be wrong here, but I believe this is the first time in PCMC history where all three trailers, not even one of them, is for a film.
It's a real sign of the times.
I know. Okay, the first one I want to talk about is a new animated series coming to HBO Max, which is HBO's streaming service, which is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply called Looney Tunes Cartoons.
Yeah, I saw this, and it's like, it's not them revamping cartoons. It's not them doing a different style. I kind of had to do a double take, because it's like, these are new Looney Tunes cartoons, but they look like Looney Tunes, like they look like old school Looney Tunes cartoons.
They've gone back to early designs of their characters and even early characterizations. Like, it looks like Daffy Duck has gone back to just being an insane crackhead.
Yeah.
Instead of a sardonic asshole. And the look of it completely matches the original theatrical release cartoons. It's actually beautiful.
Yeah, and did you hear the other Looney Tunes? I know this might be breaking news, because it was just announced yesterday. But did you see the other big Looney Tunes news this week?
No. Yes. Go, tell me.
It has finally been confirmed. Space Jam 2.
Here's a perfect example of a very old license, a very old intellectual property, where it's doing two things, and one of them I'm extremely excited about, and the other I could not give a shit about at all.
Yeah, the original Space Jam, I mean,
it's a terrible movie.
Well, here's the thing. It's, you could say what you want about it. It's a weird enough watch that it's entertaining. Like, in terms of entertainment value, like, it's there. It's an easy watch. You can sit through the whole thing. And it's such an anomaly, and it sort of could only happen at that time in the mid-90s.
Yes.
Like all the stars aligned, like Michael Jordan was at the height of his powers.
He's so terrible in it. His acting is so terrible.
It's god awful. Looney Tunes were, for whatever reason, all over clothing at that time.
Right.
and it was this weird, like, basketball was really hot. Like, everything just converged. Like, all the cameos were interesting. Like, Bill Murray was in that movie. And it was just this weird, like, time capsule. And you can't recapture that. It's a certain kind of weird.
No, you can't.
But they're going to try with LeBron James, and I don't think it's going to work. Unless they have some, like, big ace in the hole that they've, like, really been waiting to pull the trigger on this, and now they're like, okay, the time is right. But, like, I don't know what that could be.
You know, it's playing on people's nostalgia for something, but I don't know if the nostalgia is directly for the film. Because I don't know, I know people who love to reference it. I know people who, you know, can quote it or make fun of its soundtrack that was for some reason very well known, or, you know, reference its website.
But it's still up.
Yes, but the film itself... it was a very thin film to begin with.
Yeah. It's not, yeah. it's really an anomaly of a film, because it's got, it's like a big, what's even the right way to describe it? Like, there's a lot of good parts moving around in it. Like, I think the animation looks great. It's like the next step after, like, Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like, the fact that it's a basketball plot doesn't necessarily jive, but then, like, it does give the movie this odd focus.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm interested in this new series, though.
Yeah.
Because Looney Tunes has tried, really without a lot of success, to create a rebrand of the Looney Tunes over the last 15 years. There was, like, a super serious, like, superhero Looney Tunes.
That's right.
There was Looney Tune Babies. There was a trying to be more like an adult kind of sitcom that I think was called, like, the Bugs and Daffy Show, where they were, like, roommates.
Yeah.
They keep trying this. But to me, this is – I think this will work, because this seems to be going back to what made the original shorts good, which is, like, it's a short, contained story. It's about one of the Looney Tunes – being a complete asshole and basically abusing somebody. Every Looney Tunes cartoon was basically the same thing. It was, there's the fucking Rube, there's the Stooge, and then there's the Looney Tune who is driving them crazy. And it was absurd, and it was nuts. There was even a moment in the trailer for the new series that really made me laugh, because it was a lot like the kind of joke you'd see in an old Looney Tunes, which is it was Bugs Bunny is at an amusement park, and he says something like, you know, they're right, I am amused. But he screams, I am amused, like the way he would have in the classic shorts. But it is weird then to see them on phones, like you'll see Bugs holding a smartphone.
I don't know. Yeah, that I'm going to have to see how much they play around with new technology. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
The problem is I wasn't planning on getting HBO Max.
Oh, well, you know, once they introduced that Elmo talk show.
Is that a real thing?
Did you not see the trailer for that?
I did not, no.
Okay, you should look up right now the Elmo talk show that's coming to HBO Max.
And he, tell me about it.
It's basically like Elmo doing like a Jimmy Fallon style late night show. And he's got, like, real guests. They all come on.
Is it Kevin Clash?
No. Oh, man. It's called The Not Too Late Show with Elmo.
Okay, that might be good. That's interesting. You know, wasn't HBO Max the name of one of the HBO channels?
I don't know. It very well could be.
I feel like they had a million of those before.
Because it was, like, HBO and HBO 2. And then they had like HBO Comedy, HBO Zone.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just conflating Cinemax.
Perhaps. Another trailer we watched was for a new documentary series coming to Disney Plus on May 4th, which they call Star Wars Day. It is called Disney Gallery : The Mandalorian. And it is a short series. And it seems to be a sort of behind-the-scenes look at how The Mandalorian was created. But it also has segments where the producers and actors and filmmakers who worked on the show sit around on a table discussing things. Which reminded me of Jon Favreau's Dinner for Five.
I was just going to say, that sounds very much like the old IFC show, Dinner for Five.
And Jon Favreau is one of the creators of this show.
Interesting.
I think there's a couple reasons why this show will be watched. Reason one is Baby Yoda. More Baby Yoda. I want to just get my eyes on the Baby Yoda. I want to see Baby Yoda. I want to see Werner Herzog directing Baby Yoda.
Oh my God.
And I want to see the puppet. I want to see how they did Baby Yoda.
What if they show you know Baby Yoda?
The trailer showed it to me, so I'd be very upset. And then the second reason I think is, The Mandalorian did do something I think revolutionary, which was it was shot on sets, but instead of the sets being blue screen or green screen, the sets were like LCD screens projecting a virtual reality. So it's basically like the holodeck from Star Trek.
Interesting.
Even scenes where you think they're outside, they're not outside. It's just the screen on the top of the set is like showing the sun. It's very, very wild. And I think for that reason, people will be really interested in looking at this footage. See, here's the thing. Back in the 80s and 90s, when there were more practical effects, behind the scenes things were really, really popular. And then you had the DVDs and then the rise of DVD extras. But then we hit a slump in the 2000s where there was so much CG that really, there was very little to show because it's just guys in front of computer screens. Now we seem to be going more into a sort of practical effects avenue again. Therefore, behind-the-scenes footage and behind-the-scenes programs will actually be more interesting to look at.
Yeah, like remember in the early 2000s when they really tried a couple big movies as like gimmicks where like the entire movie was basically CG? Like
yes.
Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Yes.
And Sin City, even.
But you know what? The new Lion King is that way, too. It's sort of like we've gotten there.
Yeah. Another Jon Favreau movie.
Not very good.
No.
Not very good.
Hopefully Mulan is better.
You know, before we get to the third trailer, I just got to say, as a Star Wars fan, I don't know. I feel like May the 4th became Star Wars Day over the last couple of years, and now Disney has cashed in on it as a way to release toys and make it a commercial thing. But to me, I don't know. I hate that it's based on a pun.
Yeah.
And it's a bad pun.
I mean, enough people gotten behind it, so you nerds did this to yourself.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't see Star Trek fans celebrating September 7th is 7 of 9 day.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, sir. The third trailer we looked at was a commercial for the new remake of Destroy All Humans.
Yeah, that should be... I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, the original game was fun.
I never played the original game.
Okay, so you might get more out of this game than I would. Because, like, the original game was... It reminded me a lot of, like, Rampage.
Okay.
Like, the old arcade game. With, like, an alien twist to it. Basically, like, you play in a, like, 50s B-movie.
Okay.
With aliens destroying the Earth. And that's it. It's pretty simple. It's pretty ripe for a remake. It was sort of a cult hit. And, but, like, I don't see, like, I guess the graphics are better, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what they could do to, like, the actual gameplay to really, like, jazz it up anymore. Like, this isn't going to be, like, the big Final Fantasy VII remake that just came out where they, like, overhauled the whole combat system.
Well, like, yeah. It's
a very simple arcade-style game to begin with.
I feel like remakes are having... I mean, we've been doing remakes for a while, but there's a sort of... It feels like a lot of the big releases as of late have been remakes in the world of video games.
Yeah.
Because Doom is essentially a remake, or I guess the 2016 one was a remake, and people thought that was going to be bad, and it blew people away.
Well, the thing with video games that's different when you make a remake is a lot of times you actually can improve and add stuff to the original product.
True.
And a lot of times there's a lot of rights issues, so you sort of have to remake something. A lot of times it was on a different system, so it's a lot of times more reimagining than like something meant to necessarily replace the old game. Like the new Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Have you played it?
Yes, it's very, very good. But it's explicitly called Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay.
Like, it's not trying to erase the old one. In fact, Final Fantasy VII, you can basically get on every platform. Like, it's super available if you want it. Like, they're not trying to hide it like so many, like, movie studios do. Like, for a while, whenever they would release a new Spider-Man, all the old Spider-Man movies would suddenly disappear from store shelves.
Uh-huh.
Because they didn't want you, like, focusing on the Raimi trilogy when they were trying to do that, like, Amazing Spider-Man trilogy.
Okay. So you...
But that's not necessarily the case in video games.
With the new Final Fantasy, do you feel like it's improved? And how did they improve it?
Well, it's a whole different experience. Besides the graphics obviously being more stunning, they're releasing it in several parts. So they just released part one, which is an entire game, but it's the original Final Fantasy was four discs long.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
And basically, the game that just came out is just part one and kind of... Okay, I got it. The best way to describe it is...
Okay.
In the original game, the first, let's say, 4 or 5 hours took place in one location.
Okay.
And you focused on this, like, city area before, and then eventually you leave the city and you go off and have a big adventure. The remake, this whole first game of the remake is just that, like, 5 hour city area. Blown up to, like, 40 to 60 hours.
Oh, okay.
So wow. They're, like, so really fleshing it out.
So it's going to be long.
It's going to be long.
Wow.
And redid the whole combat system, so it's not really turn-based anymore. It's more like action RPG oriented.
I could see that upsetting people.
They struck a good balance. Like, you can actually set it so that, like, on a whim during battle, you can hit a button and basically it turns into, like, it slows down time to, like, a below a crawl, so you can, like, pick and choose what you want to do next. So they basically gave you the option of, like, doing basically the old system, or like if you want to speed it up at any time, you just hit a button and you're like doing live combat.
I have to say, maybe I'm a Philistine when it comes to video games, but I can never get enjoyment out of turn-based games like that. The last one I tried to play was actually the last South Park game. And I don't know, I just, it's, it, it just, I don't know, maybe I'm just I know I love running and gunning. I don't know. I need when it comes to video games, I'm very unintellectual.
Well, yeah, because a lot of those like old JRPGs, like it's a process. Like you build up to it. Like the whole like first part of a lot of these games, the first couple hours, are like grinding away, building your party up. Like a lot of these games, like you start with nothing. So you have to build that up. So if you're not willing to like give it time, you know, you're going to get very little out of it.
Mm. All right, you know what? Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll have the chill session and we'll talk more about shit. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is a podcast that's available everywhere podcasts are found. This is a podcast about movies, TV show, video games, toys, and all sorts of what's the word I'm looking for?
Ephemera, minutia.
Yes, thank you. Ephemera was what I was reaching for. Fanboy ephemera, if you will. I'm joined again by Mr. Vin Forte. Vin, how are you?
What's going on, everybody?
Oh, he's got on his sexy voice.
That means we're going to start talking about Magic the Gathering.
Ooh. Ooh. So, this is a chill sesh. What have you been doing?
I have been playing a lot of Magic the Gathering.
Now, isn't there a show coming out, like an animated show?
Is there?
I think the Russo brothers are doing it.
I mean, if the Russos are involved, I have my... My antennas are certainly up.
All right, tell me about you. Where have you been playing it? I've never played it before.
I've been playing it on my computer through Magic the Gathering Arena, which is their like online version of it.
So you don't collect the actual cards?
Well, you can collect cards. You can buy virtual cards, but you basically have everything you need right out of the gate. So it's like it's free to play, but you can pay for like random booster packs and stuff.
Okay. You know, I look like the kind of person who would have played Magic, but just like Dungeons and Dragons, I guess I never had enough friends or nerdy enough friends to sort of get me into it. So I kind of missed Magic the Gathering, but I always wanted to play it.
Well, this is a good way to get into it if you've ever been interested, because it really cuts out a lot of the BS playing it online, because it sort of, it guides your hand a little bit. In terms of, like, it tells you what every action does, if you need that help. So you're never, like, at a loss looking at your cards, like, oh, well, what, I get the gist of it, but, like, I've got this weird card, like, what does this weird card do? Like, you're never, like, at a loss for what you need to put down in order to, like, summon something, like, what the cost is.
Okay.
But like, it really does a good balancing act of, like, if you're new, it's pretty easy to get into, but if you know the rules already, then you're already like acclimated and you can sort of hit the ground running.
Is there any functionality to trade the virtual cards?
I believe so. I haven't done that yet.
Tell me, is the gameplay slow and leisurely, or is it kind of fast and exciting?
It could be both, honestly. Like it ramps up. Like when you get a game going, like you gotta build up, you gotta pull your mana. And then, you know, once you get into it and you start knocking people's points down, taking down some legendary beasts, then it can get kind of exciting.
Well, I know that you've been working from home. Is it something that you could kind of be playing in the background while you're working, or does it need your, like, full attention?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you could definitely play it in the background.
So how often have you been playing?
Like every other day I'll, like, log on at night. Uh-huh. Before bed and just play a couple rounds.
As a pop culture man child, I'm really interested in what the COVID-19 pandemic has done to transform our media consumption.
Oh, I've been playing way more video games. That's for sure.
Okay.
And like I've been hanging out with a lot. Honestly, I feel like it's made a lot of people more social.
Really?
Because it's forcing a lot of people to like use webcams and go online to like meet people in ways that they wouldn't have before because they've just been like I'll just go over that person's house. They're like, I'll wait. They're probably going to, like, you know, we're going to meet up and go to the movies in a week or so anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like people are getting together online in, like, Discord servers to play Jackbox. People are getting together, like, stream shows on Netflix. I was watching a couple of friends of mine, like, got a bunch of people together. And there's this new extension that Netflix has on Chrome browsers called Netflix Watch Party. And basically, yes, like, yes. Basically, like, you can all watch, you can all log into your Netflix accounts and, like, all watch on the same screen, like, the same show and, like, talk and chat, like, while the show is going on.
Interesting. Because if this pandemic were to happen 10 years ago, it would be so wildly different.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know what, like, even 20 years ago, like, it would, people would be losing their minds. Like, you would just be, phone bills would be through the roof. Like, people would just be on the phone all the time.
Everyone's using Zoom. We're recording this right now through Zoom. I mean, what was Zoom doing before this? Were they, you know, because I'm sure their fucking stock is through the roof.
Zoom was basically meant for, like, office use. Like, Zoom has completely come out of nowhere. Like, honestly, the platform that's falling way behind is Skype. Skype was, like, the first big sort of, like, platform of this type and felt like it was going to be the standard. And in many ways, it's still in the mix, but, like, Zoom is huge now. Discord is huge now.
Why do you think Zoom took this central role? Because teachers are using Zoom to teach their kids. It's just, it's somehow become this, like, almost like the standard thing.
I was going to say, because it's pretty, like, standard, because it was originally meant for, like, office use. So I think the fact that it's so, like,
user-friendly,
that setting. Yeah, it's user-friendly. It's already used in work settings. So I think, like, people just very quickly adopted it because it was, like, already a go-to for those kinds of work areas.
Interesting. And I know a lot of podcasts are using it.
Yeah, I used it just last night to record with Emilio.
WrestleRap.
Yeah, WrestleRap. Emilio Sparks.
I've gotten into something that can only be described as dangerous.
Oh, my God. What is it? I'm afraid to ask.
The world of donkey shows. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
No, dangerous knowing my predilection for being addicted to things. I've gotten into eBay.
Uh-oh.
And Etsy.
Oh, Etsy is great. Yeah, Etsy is basically like, oh, I want something like fandom related, but the rights holders of that fandom or that license have not made it yet.
Yes.
So I'm just going to rely on actual fans to make something for me.
Exactly, sir. I am going out to work. I'm an essential worker, but I'm an asshole. So, but I've been inside a lot. So what I've been doing is, you know, my basement with all my toys and my collections, I've been sort of streamlining them and revamping them and freshening them up. So I've got new things to look at and trying to get less clutter around and stuff, you know, getting rid of things that I don't necessarily need anymore. And one of the things I'm trying to do is my desk. I want my desk to be Haunted Mansion themed.
Ooh.
So I've got that I got at Disney World, a really cool painting of the party scene in the, like, the dining hall. And on my desk, I've got a mug that is, it's a big purple coffee mug that has the wallpaper, the famous wallpaper from the ride. And I've got a little, like, keychain charm that I've hooked up. And then from eBay, I found that there are Haunted Mansion action figures, which I did not know about. They were only sold in the parks, and there was only one wave of them. And I haven't got them all yet, but I got the bride, I got one of the hitchhiking ghosts, and I got the caretaker and his bulimic dog.
But did you get Eddie Murphy yet?
You know, Eddie Murphy's not in this series. Maybe they'll do a second wave. Here's hoping.
Was such a smash hit.
So I've got those figures up. And I was just like, you know, I want more stuff. So I went to Etsy and I was able to find a lot of non-Disney cool fan shit.
Mm.
Like, I ordered, somebody found, like, the actual, like, patent for the Doom buggy, the car that you ride in the ride-through, when it was first created, it was, like, revolutionary. So it's kind of like the patent and blueprint for that ride system.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered that. I ordered, it's a cool, like, little kind of cartoon painting of Madame Leota, which is the floating head.
Oh, yeah.
And the sort of endless hallway thing, which is another painting. So what I'm kind of doing is, instead of, like, I don't have anything in the area that says Haunted Mansion, but it's all, like, little visual elements from the attraction.
Right.
So, and I'm kind of doing that thing where I'm, you know, a lot of the prints and stuff you could buy off Etsy, you know, you could buy them in a bunch of different sizes. I go for the smallest size because I'm going to put them together almost like a puzzle on the wall next to the desk. So anyway, I'm basically constantly browsing through Etsy because the Etsy app is almost like Tumblr or Pinterest, but you could buy it.
Yeah, again, it's great because it's just what it's kind of just like whatever you want. Like it's if the company who owns it hasn't made it, and it's that obvious that you're thinking about it, like someone on Etsy has probably made what you're looking for.
Right, and then you got eBay for
That's just like cool, like rare stuff that you'll just see pop up every once in a while.
Right, and now that the stores are closed, it's getting harder to go out and get shit. Walmart put out a series of Kenner Classic Real Ghostbusters figures. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of like they did with the Star Wars figures. It is a recreation of the original figures from the figure itself to the card back. It looks exactly like it looked when it was first released. And I haven't been able to go to a Walmart. I kind of don't want to go to a Walmart because, you know, I want to stay safe and, you know, I just kind of want to avoid that. And the Walmart website, I check it every day and they have not had it. So I was like, fuck it, let me go on eBay. I found it for an okay price on eBay and I ordered it.
Yeah, there you go. That's how capitalism works, baby.
I know. But, you know, part of me feels bad because, eBay is not Amazon. But when it comes to ordering something from Amazon, I'm starting to feel bad because the Amazon workers feel really like they're not being protected.
Yeah, no. I mean, they're not being protected, straight up. Like, they're just... I mean, you talk about big companies that could be shelling out money for their employees. Like, Amazon's top of the list.
And they don't have PPE.
No. Like, what was their lunch breaks? Like 25 minutes or something? And by the time you walk to the lunch break area, you basically have to walk back. Even if lunch started when you sat down, like, that's still way too little for a lunch break. An hour at least is like the standard for lunch.
Yeah. You know what it is? Amazon is this perfect example of like the manufacturer of consent, to quote Noam Chomsky. Like, yeah. I know it's bad. I know Jeff Bezos is evil. I know I shouldn't be involved in it, but it's so goddamn easy. And my selfish ass just wants to use Amazon.
And it's like, whatever site are you going to go to? You're going to overstock.com? No, you're going to still use Amazon.
What am I going to ask Jeeves?
Yeah, exactly. God, ask Jeeves.
I don't think I ever used Ask Jeeves.
I never used Ask Jeeves.
Was it like a Google?
Oh, yeah. Let me, does it still exist? I'm sure it's got to still exist. I mean, let's see.
Ask Jeeves. It was an early search engine, pre-Google, pre-Yahoo, pre-Bing, fucking Bing.
So now Ask Jeeves is basically, like, the front page is very busy. Like, they've got the search bar at the top. Also, now it's just ask.com. It's not Ask Jeeves. They got rid of the bouginess.
Okay, I guess a bunch of British butlers from 100 years ago protested.
It's kind of just like the front page of, like, Yahoo or something. Where it's like, there's a bunch of different tabs, and it's like culture, TV, movies, entertainment.
Okay.
But like, what if I search for like...
Ask Jeeves something.
Yeah. What? Oh, well, here's something. It has like auto... It auto-fills the top results. So want to take a guess what comes up? I just put in what?
Oh, maybe, fuck.
I'm going to give you three chances to get to get close to guessing one of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 things that come up at when you put what into Ask Jeeves.
All right, I'm going to really try now.
Okay.
What does Corona mean?
Nope.
Fuck.
You're never going to get this. I don't know why these are I have no clue why these are the ones that come up.
What is Mel Gibson's net worth?
Nope.
What? Huh. It's got to start with what, right? What cleaning products to inject?
Nope. None of the... I see where you're going with all of those, because you're thinking like, oh, Google's a good search engine. They, if they do stuff automated, like it's the algorithm filters things by timeliness. I don't know what this says about either Ask Jeeves or the people who use Ask Jeeves that are like influencing the algorithm, but here they are. What foods to avoid in gout?
Okay.
What is Asperger's syndrome?
Okay.
What are bitcoins?
Okay.
What is stenosis of the spine?
I feel like all of these are one 65-year-old man in Florida.
What is myeloma cancer?
Yikes.
What Part A Medicare covers?
This is for real just old people questions.
What is cellulitis infection caused by?
What is Bitcoin? What is an Ariana Grande? Yeah. Is that a drink?
This is actually like kind of a fun game. Like, let me put what's another common word I could put in here?
How?
Okay, let's see what how is. Okay. How burn belly fat fast?
Just like that, like you read it?
Yes.
So like a caveman wrote it?
How burn belly fat fast? How to install WhatsApp on my PC?
No, oh boy, that's a sad question.
How to turn off pop-up blockers? how calculate percent? How to solve this equation?
Definitely Googled how to calculate percents.
How much for a dental implant?
Again, these are all old people queries.
And how many ounces in a pound?
Okay, so we got a different kind of clientele for the ask. All right, Now let's go to the real existential one. Why?
Okay. I'm going to read these from bottom to top because the last one's really going to get ready for a loop.
Okay.
Actually, the last couple might. Okay. Why is my potassium level high?
Why too many bananas?
Well, it's funny you say that because the next one is why not to eat bananas?
Okay.
Three of the ones on here are some variation of why are flags at half mast today?
Okay.
Why is my hemoglobin low? and the last two, why is my dryer not heating? And my favorite one, why blood in urine male?
Oh, yikes. I feel like an old person goes to the doctor, and the doctor's like, your hemoglobin is low. And they're like, oh, okay, doctor. And then they run home to ask.com trying to get the real info. Why blood in urine?
Yikes. Why blood in urine male?
So
not only why do I have blood in my urine, but why is it have X chromosomes?
Is the blood male or the urine male? I don't know the answer. It's probably a couple different answers, but none of them are good.
No.
Blood in your urine is something I've never experienced, thank God. But it sounds like a real nightmare.
Yeah, definitely.
Ugh. This is such a random non sequitur. But I remember when I was a couple years ago when I was working in the city, I think it was then. I don't know. I remember in New York City at a certain subway stop, someone had graffitied on the wall, I cum blood. And it still haunts me to this day.
It's a haunting thought.
To Come Blood.
It's a horror movie waiting to happen.
Now, that would be a good website. Icomeblood.com. You know what? It probably exists, and I don't want to see it.
Okay, let's see.
Icomeblood.org.
.gov.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's okay to come blood. People are saying it's okay.
Okay, so it doesn't... Okay, so just... It just takes me to a lot of links about the Cannibal Corpse song, I Come Blood.
Okay. I was not aware of that song.
I will not be reading the lyrics to this. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no. It's exactly what you think they are.
You know, I just realized that the way old people go to ask.com, our president does that, but with, like, the top scientists in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he'll go up to, like, the smartest scientist in the world and be like, why is my hemoglobin low?
Why do I come blood?
Can I use UV light to cure my gout?
Speaking of batshit insane things, I sent you the Alex Jones clip before, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it. I did see it.
Where he basically is... What he's trying to say is, I will kill you. And then what he gets into, but he says it by saying, I will eat your ass. Like, in the same way you would say, I'm going to kick your ass.
Right.
But it just comes off like he's going to, like, give someone a rim job.
Right. Well, out but of then, context, like, it sounds like a hot new song from Cardi B.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end, he's just like, and the globalists are going to be first. I'm going to eat your ass.
It's like, well, he's talking about how if it came down to his children starving or killing his neighbors and eating them, he would kill his neighbors and eat them. Because God forbid we eat a vegetable ever.
Yeah.
Also, doesn't he have custody of his children.
Yeah, didn't he, like, he had some bad chili and that screwed up his whole court hearing?
I remember during his court hearing, he basically came out and said, I'm a fucking joke. I'm not real. And I don't know if he was able to walk that back with his fans by going, oh, I was just lying about that. This is the real me.
Maybe, but I think we found the real him. And it's this 6-second supercut that someone already made of that clip.
I'll eat your ass. I will eat your ass. I will eat your ass first. I'll eat your ass. I will eat your ass.
I love it. I still love the turning the freaking frogs gay.
Oh, it's great.
It's a gay bomb, baby.
Yeah, like that whole clip is great.
What I like about Alex Jones is that he's like a real deal huckster. He's like a cat. He's like, if it were The Simpsons, he would be like a Lionel Hutz character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's legitimately, like if this were the Wild West, he'd be shouting out the back of a wagon trying to sell you snake oil.
But someone's buying the snake oil, though. Like, he's funding...
Right. Shark pills.
Yeah, bone medication.
It's like these pills that are made out of shark cartilage.
Yeah.
And if you take them, you turn into a shark or something.
Oh, man. Turn the freaking frogs. It's a gay bomb, baby. What are you talking about? It's a gay bomb. And then the thing about, like, the juice boxes, where, like, the lining in juice boxes has, like, estrogen in it. That's feminizing all our boys.
Yeah. Capri sons. More like Capri daughters, am I right? Have you seen any of Midnight Gospel?
No, but someone just yesterday was telling me that it's great.
I watched the first three episodes and I did not love it. I wanted to love it, but it was not doing it for me.
Mm.
But you made me think of it because... It's a lot like that that movie Waking Life. Which Alex Jones is in that movie.
That's right.
Yeah, Waking Life is a Richard Linklater movie that is, it's a bunch of people just going on weird existential rants, but then he rotoscoped animation over it, and it's kind of like a kid in a...
No, you're thinking of A Scanner Darkly.
No, it's the same style. And same director, but this came first.
Okay. So he's in both of them.
I don't know if Jones is in both of them, but I know that they're kind of like, they kind of go together.
Okay, because I know in A Scanner Darkly, he plays like, he has a bit role as like a crazy guy on the street, like yelling about the end of the world.
Well, I think that's Waking Life, because A Scanner Darkly is based on a Philip K. Dick book.
Where Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Waking Life was sort of like just random people talking. But that's sort of what Midnight Gospel is like. It's got beautiful animation. It's the guy who did Adventure Time. But it's basically like a podcast, but it's edited to fucking ribbons, so the context is lost. You don't understand really what they're talking about. And the animation doesn't really go with the audio at all. It's sort of like random images while you're hearing a podcast, and the sound and the visual track are so disparate from one another that, to me, the whole thing didn't work.
But do you think they're trying to do that thing where, like, all the pieces are rearranged, and by the end of it, like, you're going to know what's going on? Like, they're kind of, like, trusting you to watch the whole thing?
I think that they think that. I think that there's probably a little bit of the idea of, like, the William S. Burroughs, like, cut-up technique. Like, we're just going to cut shit up and then paste it back together, and it's going to make some sort of weird existential sense. But, you know, sometimes art equals more than the sum of its parts. You can't say why you love it, but you just do. It's, even though the cinematography may not be great or the acting may not be great, you just love it. This is the opposite. Midnight Gospel, all of its elements seem to work. You've got an interesting host. You've got interesting guests. You've got really beautiful animation. Yet the whole thing equals less than the sum of its parts.
That always sucks when that happens, because it feels like whenever you come up across a situation like that in media, it always feels like there should have been more. Like, it could have really been something great. Like, it's like 75% there, and if you just had that extra 25% of something, it would have just all clicked together.
I agree, yeah. Although, I think I might be in the minority here, because other people seem to really love the show.
Yeah, I've been hearing from, like, all the people I know in animation, like, they love it.
It's certainly worth checking out. Speaking of animation, I am right now in season 2 of Avatar The Last Airbender.
Ooh.
And I've never watched it before. This is my first watch.
Does it live up to the hype that everyone has built up around it?
It didn't for, like, the first 4 episodes. And I was kind of like, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to stick with it. And now that we're in season 2, it's getting there.
Mm.
Well, actually, it's all been good, but I'm starting to understand the hype now as of, like, why people really love it.
Right. And why they despise the live-action movie.
Right. Well, it's fucking M. Night Shyamalan can ruin anything. You've seen the series, right?
I have not.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
I know the gist of it. I know about it. But I just have not, like, sat down and watched it front to back.
That's basically where I was. And then a friend of mine, she let me borrow her complete series. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. I'm stuck inside. Now's the time to do it. And I actually haven't been binging it, which I think is the best thing. Because sometimes when you binge something, you digest it too quickly. I've actually been watching it, you know, like an episode a day, maybe 2 episodes here, 2 episodes here, kind of stretching it out. And I think it's been better.
Yeah, I think you can kind of almost get spoiled by binging something. Like, especially with shows like that, where it's not necessarily, like, all planned out in advance, and there are a lot of episodes per season. Like, you really need to, like, let each episode sink in.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan, but I binged the first 2 seasons of Game of Thrones really, really fucking quickly. And it was kind of like a flash in the pan. It was like, oh, this is cool, and now it's done, and I'm not thinking about it anymore. And then when the next season came out, I was like, I'm done. I don't even remember what I looked at, what I watched.
Yeah. Though with Game of Thrones, it feels like maybe you got off at the right time.
After season 2, I heard it was better. I heard it was good for longer than that.
Yeah. The first few chapters of the first Game of Thrones book is probably, like, the most read thing in the past, like, 10 years. Like, all.
Oh, yeah. every Wall Street douchebag buys it and reads it and then is like, I don't know how to read, and then puts it down.
Yeah, it's this weird, like, there's this weird phenomenon in book reading that I do not like. And it happens with Game of Thrones, it happens with Harry Potter, where you'll get people who are really into Harry Potter or Game of Thrones, and they'll reread the books constantly, like once a year, that'll be their thing. But it's not like watching a movie once a year, because a movie's just like an afternoon of you getting reacquainted with that movie. If you're going to reread Game of Thrones once a year, that's like a, what, 4-5 month investment or something? So like you're putting so much time every year into just like rereading the same thing.
But you know what? I don't consume that way, but I can understand that, because in some ways that's like a religion. You are coming back to the same text over and over again and getting something new out of it. The word fan comes from fanaticus, and fanaticus, I think, is either Latin or Greek for, it basically means like somebody who's devoted to the church.
Mm.
So that's where the word fan comes from. And when you think about it, every religion is like a fandom, because there's a text involved. Like, you know, the Jewish people have Old Testament, and Muslim people have the Quran, and some people have Harry Potter.
But to me, it's like, if you're into Game of Thrones, wouldn't you then, like, okay, you can reread it every year, and that's fine. But, like, it's not so much the rereading as much as it's like, okay, well, what are you going to read next?
Well,
and they're like, oh, well, I don't. And like, oh, well, I don't know. It's like, well, there's a million things that are like Game of Thrones. Like, wouldn't you like to read something else that's similar?
Right. I don't know. I feel like the comparison isn't apt, because I feel like I know a lot of people who read Harry Potter, and I've met maybe two people that have read all of Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, that's true. There's definitely way more people who have read all the Harry Potters.
Of course, all of the Game of Thrones books aren't even out.
That's also very true, too.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get finished.
You think he's going to die?
He might pull Stephen King and just, like, do the last two or three books, like, really quickly to get them out.
Oh, like the later Dark Tower books?
Yeah.
You know, the other day I was saying to myself, oh, man, they never adapted the Dark Tower. And then they did. They fucking did. I didn't even see it.
No, I didn't see it either.
But boy, I know people were really fucking unhappy with it.
Yeah.
It's an example of something that was caught in development hell. But instead of dying, some version of it got shat out. But it was basically for no one.
Yeah.
It's a version nobody wanted for an audience that didn't want it.
And the marketing was weird, too, because they tried to kind of tie it together to other Stephen King movies.
Right, because It Volume 1 was out around the same time, and they were like, hey, you like the Stephen King? He wrote this, too. Kind of, not really. Yeah. Because the movie was like a sequel to the book series.
Yeah, it was like another go-around of the books.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll come back with Obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm here with Vin Forte. We are doing Obsessions. Vin, what's your current obsession?
My current obsession is the Nintendo Switch, and specifically a little game called Animal Crossing.
I hear about this game every day from my girlfriend.
It is, don't be fooled by that subtle jab that Mike just threw. It is not just for women. It is not just for men. It is not just for children. It is for everyone during this pandemic who wants the illusion of being outside and doing outside things.
I apologize for my subtle jab. I actually know a ton of people who are playing this game. If I had a Switch, I'd be playing it.
Yeah, no, there's something just so relaxing about it.
Tell me about your island.
Oh, my island? I actually just downloaded the game the other day, so my island is not fully formed yet.
Okay.
I'm still in the stage, in the sort of hunter-gathering stage, where I am collecting a lot of fruit. I am fishing a lot. I'm going to a lot of other friends' islands and taking all of their turnips and building up my portfolio and my bells. I'm getting a lot of bells.
Which is the economy runs on bells, right?
The economy runs on bells and Nook miles, which are basically like frequent flyer miles.
Okay.
And you basically, the aim of the game is you have to pay off your loan. You have to pay off your debt.
That sounds like the aim of my life.
Exactly. There's a fat, adorable raccoon named Tom Nook, who's like the slumlord of the whole island.
Okay.
And he basically is like, oh, here's your house, and hands you a pop-up tent. And then you basically live in a tent for a little while until you have the money to pay off the rent for the tent. And then you get an actual house. And then the more money you pay off, the more you can like add on to your house.
Oh,
you
okay.
You could buy different stuff. You could terraform the island.
So unlike the real America, there is upward mobility.
There is an American dream.
Yeah, you can actually get out of the hole.
Exactly.
In Animal Crossing. Okay.
It's every millennial's dream.
And you feel like it really speaks to people during this time.
Oh, yeah, because I know tons of people who, like, will just get on stream with each other and just, like, play Animal Crossing while just, like, hanging out, basically. And be like, oh, come to my island. And people, like, fly into each other's islands. And you could, like... I went to a friend's island the other day while we were Skyping, and they were just like walking me around their island and like, here's my house. And oh, you like what I did with the walls in here? Like, look how silly this is. I put urinals in my bedroom. Look at that. Like, and just like all this silly stuff they've been doing.
I heard Elijah Wood went to somebody's island.
Yeah. Yeah. Celebrities are all about the Animal Crossing. So you might, depending on whose island you go to, you might stumble across a celebrity or two.
This is exciting. I hear that there's like a shortage of Switches out there. So if you wanted to get a Switch right now, it would be hard to do so.
Yeah, I heard Nintendo is now, like, they're going to manufacture more because they've heard the demand. Nintendo's always been oddly, like, coy with, like, their supply and demand of things. Like, I don't know if you remember when the Wii was really hot.
Yeah. But
there were not enough Wiis for... I worked at Target at the time. And when I say there were not enough Wiis, I mean for, like, months and months on end. And then we would finally get them in, and we'd get, like, 2 to 5 in. And then they'd be gone before, like, the middle of the day. And you would just have to hope that, like, you showed up at Target early enough on a random day that we got, like, a handful of them in.
I absolutely remember this. Because I looked for one for months, and then finally on one random day in Brooklyn, which I live in Staten Island, I was in Brooklyn, and I went to Best Buy, and I got one.
Yeah, it was literally, like, random, and because everyone was getting them in short supply, you couldn't, like, call ahead and save one or pre-order one. It was just, like, you had to be there when they had one available. And now that's kind of the same way with the Switch right now.
Do you think they do this on purpose?
I think a little of it's on purpose to sort of create demand. Because like the demand is already there for the Switch. It's a hot item. But like you see it now when people can't get a hold of the Switch, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I need to get it for Animal Crossing, or I need to get it for Zelda, or Mario Odyssey. Like this Switch, I don't think it can be understated how successful the Switch has been.
I really want to play Mario Odyssey.
Mario Odyssey is so much fun.
That's awesome. All right, let me tell you about my obsession. I'm obsessed with a podcast that started about 2 years ago, and it's called You're Wrong About. You're Wrong About is hosted by two journalists, Sarah Marshall and Michael Hobbs. Sarah Marshall she's freelance, but she's currently working on a book about the Satanic Panic.
Oh, okay.
And Michael Hobbs is also freelance, I think, but he writes a lot for Huffington Post.
Mm.
And I'm totally obsessed with it. I listened to like 3 episodes a day. I'm truly obsessed with it. And the point of the podcast is, it's called You're Wrong About, and it's basically like something you think you know from recent history, but you're wrong about it.
Huh.
So like episodes are, you're wrong about Anna Nicole Smith. You're wrong about Amy Fisher. You're wrong about The obesity epidemic. You're wrong about Ebonics.
Huh.
The hosts are very lively. It's very well researched, but it's not dry. It's not the kind of podcast where it feels like homework. It's actually a lot of fun to hear them talk to one another, but the information is great, and they put in the research, and the important thing is that they're not conspiracy theorists. They are finding readily available information, but the thing is, nobody read that information at the time, or perhaps as the years pass, people have forgotten important parts of these stories.
Hmm.
Like, it always begins with, every episode is one of them telling a story to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And it always begins with them saying, hey, what do you know about Amy Fisher? Or what do you know about, you know, Ebonics? And the person says basically what everyone thinks, like, oh, Ebonics is, they tried to take African-American English and make it into a real language, and they tried to teach it in schools, and people got upset about it.
Right.
That's wrong. In fact, what was happening was they were finding that African-American students in, I forget what state, but in whatever state, African-American students were falling behind white students. And they were putting these African-American students in special ed. And through a study, they found out that it's because all the tests were written in proper English. And if you wrote the tests in a vernacular that the kids spoke, they would actually have higher test scores. So the initiative was, let's just start writing tests in this common vernacular for African Americans, not let's teach Ebonics. But that became what the national narrative was, and that's what people got all butthurt over. And now when you say Ebonics, it's still like a punchline, but in fact, it was not at all what people think it was.
Interesting. I'm totally on board with this.
You would love it. Knowing what I know about you, you would love it. The Amy Fisher episode was fascinating. Amy Fisher was a victim that somehow the media turned into the villain.
Well, because she was the one that had the gun.
Right. But she was 15 years old, and she was preyed on by a 35-year-old man.
Right, exactly. Like today, in the age of Me Too, if that happened...
Right.
Like, people would immediately say she's the victim, and rightfully so.
Right.
But back then, it was like the running joke was that, like, they couldn't get a TV movie out fast enough.
Right. And the newspapers called her the Long Island Lolita.
Yeah, meanwhile, Lolita is basically, like, a colloquialism for, like, young girl who's, like, entrapping older man.
Right. It was not that at all. She was this girl who came from an abusive family with an abusive father. This older man, this adult man, preyed on her. This is another part of the story that I didn't know. He was friends with somebody who was ran an escort service, and he pimped her out. She was sex worker. That's something that no one talks about.
Yeah.
So from top to bottom, Amy Fisher, yes, she shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco, the wife of... the person who preyed on her. But the way that the story was covered dehumanized her and turned her into something that she wasn't.
I want to hear about the Anna Nicole Smith one.
I was listening to that one today. Basically, here's the thing. What we think we know about Anna Nicole Smith was she got famous, and then she met this rich old man and was a gold digger, married him for his money. He died, and she took all his money, and his kids fought her.
But now, is the flip side of that then... Because the Amy Fisher one was a story of context in that, like, again, if that happened today, the narrative would be completely different. I feel like that's a similar situation with Anna Nicole Smith, or is there more to it?
Oh, there's definitely more to it, because first of all, he wasn't so old that he had no brains. He knew who she was. He knew, first of all, they met before she was famous. He knew that she had other boyfriends. They had a deal. They had an arrangement. His wife had died and his girlfriend had died, and he was alone and he was very rich. And he basically made a deal with Anna Nicole Smith. I'll take care of you financially if you'll be my companion. And she really did love him.
Yeah, and she was like his best friend.
Right. I mean, it was a sexual relationship, But everyone was like, oh, she's taking advantage of this old man. And it's like, no, both her and the old man were very upfront with one another about what their relationship was. And it was a mutual understanding. So again, and one of the themes that comes up a lot in the show is that women are often the ones who are really, the media takes the dimension out of the women. The women right. end up being just, you know, like Amy Fisher is the Lolita. Anna Nicole Smith is the gold digger. They become this one thing.
Right, because when it's a guy, it's always like, oh, he's clever. He's cunning. He's got a dark edge to him. Like,
right. Today I was listening to an episode, You're Wrong About Yoko Ono Breaking Up the Beatles. And it's about how she's just this artist who had no intention to break up the Beatles. John broke up the Beatles.
Right.
And also John was a really fucking terrible person.
Yeah, people really gloss over a lot of stuff John Lennon did. Didn't he beat his first wife?
She says that he only physically hurt her once, but he was emotionally abusive nonstop. He was a shitty person. But anyway, it's a fascinating, really entertaining podcast You're Wrong About. Definitely check it out. Vin, thank you for being on the show. You can listen to this podcast anywhere.
Anywhere.
Podcasts are available anywhere.
Spotify?
You fucking bet, of course.
Google Play?
Yes, of course.
Napster?
No, you got me. We're not on Napster.
You mean I'm going to have to go on LimeWire and download it illegally?
We're on Kazaa.
Oh, good.
So we end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.